Before we get to the podcast, as you've heard by now, Juan Soto is staying in New York, but he will not be playing for the New York Yankees. He has agreed to a 15-year, $765 million deal with the Mets. So before we get to the podcast, just wanted to give a few quick thoughts. Obviously, this renders the Yankees pretty much irrelevant, barring a few major splashes, because there's just not another Soto on the market. And you can tell the Yankee fan tonight and just text with friends or whatever is just... They got dumped by their girlfriend. They're bitter. They're saying, we didn't want him anyway. Too much money. And, I mean, look, the Yankees made a respectable offer. 15 years, $760 million was the offer. I guess it was 16 for 760. So was it the extra money? I mean, based on money per year, the Mets did offer more money. I mean, you can't really kill the Yankees and say they didn't offer enough or didn't, you know, they were cheap or anything like that. But at the end of the day, Hal and the Yankees, this new regime since George died, this is just they found a way to come up short, whether it's Bryce Harper or Machado or Ohtani, who didn't want to come east. There's always an excuse. Freddie Freeman never would have wanted to come to the Yankees. Soto didn't want it. Seems like no one wants to be a Yankee, so the Yankees just find ways to come up second in these negotiations, and there's no replacing Soto. Now, you could talk to me about Bregman or Santander from the Orioles, who had a bunch of homers last year. It's just... Man, there's no Soto. There's no other Soto. They're going to have to upgrade the pitching, starting rotation, bullpen, and just spread that money around. Now, if you have $760 million to spend, you take that and you be aggressive and you try to put it in three or four players and you have Judge, you have Cole, and you hope to be in the playoffs and just get lucky. But the Yankees, this is a big, big blow, and I'm sure Soto will get booted in that building for the rest of his career, which is odd because he's, it's... What, 5 or 6 weeks ago, he hits a home run that Saturday night with two men on, that great at bat against Cleveland, two out, two strikes, and he hits the ball in the right center field stands to put the Yankees in the World Series for the first time in 15 years, a World Series they could have very easily have won, could have very easily been going back to LA up 3-2, and he's a hero forever, and I don't know if that changes things if they win the World Series, but Soto, I mean, it's very clear he wanted every last dollar. Maybe he didn't trust Hal. Hey, if this guy signs me, then he's going to put the, keep his wallet in his pocket based on his previous behavior, and I'm not going to have a chance to win. Or maybe it was just as simple as, hey, the Mets are offering me more money per year, more money, in terms of the annual value of the contract, and I'm going to go that route. I trust Cohen to spend. I don't know what the deciding factor was because the money was pretty close, but the Mets just offered a little more, did what it took, and he is going to be a New York Met. Now, this hurts the Yankees more than helps the Mets, because that is not, look, they got Lindor. We'll see if they bring Alonso back. They were in the NLCS last year, but that is not, I mean, they finished third last year. This is not like a championship-level team, at least as constructed. They just don't have championship-level pitching. They add Montas to the starting rotation. They add Clay Holmes, so Clay Holmes and Soto reunited as Mets, as weird as that is, at least for the foreseeable future. Clay Holmes is going to be a starter. But you lose it seems like they're going to lose Manaea. They lose Severino to the A's. They pieced together the rotation last year, but that is not like championship level pitching. They're going to have a really good lineup, and we'll see if they keep Alonso. But you still have the Braves to deal with. You still have the Phillies to deal with. They're not even a lock to win their own division. And once you don't win the division, that puts you in the merry-go-round of having to win the best of three, then the best of five, and it makes you take the long road to the World Series. So. We'll see what it means for the Mets. The Mets are going to be really good. Are they the favorite? I don't think so. And you could sense the hurt again, just to go back to the Yankees. You could sense the hurt in the Yankee fan of, we didn't want him anyway. He's greedy. The Yankee fan feels betrayed. Yankee fan feels like they had something special with Soto. Like, hey, he loved us. We loved him. And now they feel like that love wasn't reciprocated. And maybe it wasn't. It's a business. I mean, it's not like he was a homegrown Yankee. He was a hired gun. And the Yankees fell short in the negotiations. And it's just, I mean, you could spin any way you want it for the Yankees. It is a bitter, bitter night, a bitter pill for the Yankees who, look, Judge is older. Judge is starting to approach his mid-30s. Cole's starting to approach his mid-30s. It's starting to appear like Judge can very easily, retire without a ring. This might have been Judge's best chance to win a World Series this past year, because I don't know how you replace Soto. Again, you can go for these guys on the free agent market, but it's not like Cashman has had the magic touch with signing these free agents. They're not exactly, one of these teams that, the Moneyball Oakland A's, where they find value at the bottom of the barrel. They need to make signings. They need to make trades where they can't screw it up. Soto was a signing where, hey, let's just get the best player, because even we can't screw it up. When they try to get cute, when they try to, go on the margins and find these guys that are under the radar, it never seems to work out. Even guys they spent a lot of money on, like Rodon. I mean, just look at past years of trades and acquisitions they've made. None of them ever seemed to work out, except for Soto. Soto was one that can't miss. So that is out the window. And the Yankees are, this is a crippling move for the Yankees. A devastating night if you're a Yankee fan, and you could spin it all the ways you want if you're the Yankees. Hey, it was too much money. We don't need him. We'll be fine without him. Let me tell you something. You're not going to be fine without him. You were 82-80 before you got Soto the year before. Now, Judge was hurt. I understand that. And I don't think it'll be that bad this year. Maybe you sneak into the playoffs. Maybe you can compete for a division. But as far as being a World Series contender, World Series champion, that seems like a stretch. Now, again, we'll fill out the rest of the roster here in the coming weeks, the coming months. But just a devastating, devastating night for the Yankees, any way you spin it. Let's get to the podcast.
This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, the Bear, Chris Felica of Fox Sports, will join us. We will talk about the college football playoff. The teams are out. The bracket is out. Our first ever 12-team playoff. I'll get to the NFL here in a minute. Usually do the NFL on these Monday shows, but the college, I think, is the more pertinent thing. And I'll just start off by saying a couple things. I had no problem in the big controversy, Bama-SMU. I don't even know that there was much of a controversy unless you're a Bama fan. I think they could have gone either way with it. And it gets pretty tedious, and a lot of it is bias. A lot of it is, hey, you're a Bama fan or you hate Bama. If you're a Bama supporter, you could say SMU played nobody. They played a soft schedule. We would have only had one or two losses against that schedule. They're probably right. If you're SMU, you say, hey, if you're Bama, you can't say anything because you lost three games and you deserve to be punished for the losses. They're probably right. So both sides are right. Could have put either of them in. I think the fact that they gave Bama a break last year and put them in over an undefeated FSU, probably didn't want to do that 2 years in a row. They probably didn't want the grief of, hey, Bama did lose three games. That awful loss to Oklahoma. SMU rallied down 17 in the fourth quarter. Now, Clemson had just hung on and won by 17. Probably different story, but the fact that SMU lost by a field goal at the buzzer, and we always hear in these hypothetical scenarios, well, what if SMU loses by a field goal last second? That's the exact scenario that played out. It was a last second field goal, and they did a terrible job, by the way, with scoring a touchdown, 18 seconds left, not covering the kickoff, missing a bunch of tackles, then not holding, like letting the 18-yard completion take place, where if you just get the hold, it all comes down to is a Hail Mary, give them the 10 yards. So they botched that, but the fact that they were competitive enough in the game, they were ahead of Bama to start, that you could have gone either way with it, but I have no problem with them putting SMU in, just like I would have no problem if they put Bama in. So I get that. I will say, though, I usually love this conference title game weekend with the college football, and I'm pro 12-team playoff. I like having the extra games, the extra things to talk about, to bet, to watch, all of that. It did hurt this weekend. First of all, the games Friday night stunk. Some of the games early Saturday were bad. It did hurt the juice of the SEC game, the Big Ten game, to say, hey, these teams could lose and they're still in. Usually what makes these games fun are the drama. Hey, if they lose, they're out. They're mini playoff games. You didn't have that this year with these teams already in. Georgia was already in. Penn State was in. Oregon in Texas. All these teams are in. They're just playing for seeding, for buys. There's just not that drama. So it did hurt the luster of the weekend a little bit to know that we knew so many of the teams going in. So, like I said, the matchups are set. The one big issue I have, and I don't know what the fix is, because they made these rules where they give preferential treatment to the conference champions. You cannot have an Oregon team, and Oregon's the one seed. You can't have an Oregon team that's the only undefeated team. They're the one seed, and they get screwed where they have to get the winner of Tennessee, Ohio State. They're in a terrible bracket. They got no favors whatsoever. A lot of these teams got much better draws than Oregon did as the one seed. So that's not fair. I have an issue with that. But other than that, you could argue with some of the seeding, for sure, in terms of like, hey, did Penn State belong there? Should they put Notre Dame at the five? You could move these teams around and have issues with that. But as far as who got in, my biggest issue is the fact that Oregon, and it's a problem with the format, that Oregon got so screwed in terms of, what they have to go through in their bracket, just because, look, they went undefeated. They were the only team that went undefeated. They beat Ohio State. They won the Big Ten. They should get a little more of a break than, having to play a very dangerous second-round matchup that they're going to have to play. So the first-round matchups, Indiana at Notre Dame laying 8.5. Clemson, Texas, Texas laying 11, Tennessee at Ohio State laying 7.5, and SMU at Penn State laying 8. I just don't know if Indiana can score enough to say they're going to be live, but I think that could be a closer game if they can get stops. I think Indiana will be a trendy team too, a popular team. They just, every time they've played a good team, they've struggled to move the ball. Clemson, can they hang with Texas? I kind of think all of the dogs. I don't know that I lay the points in any of these. That's how I put that. I don't know that I lay the points. It'd either be dog or pass, and I think all of them. So, you know, we'll talk to Bear here in a second, see what he thinks. But to me, at least first glance, I would take the dog in, I think, all of these matchups, if not just pass on the game. I don't know that I like any of the favorites, but that's the college. We'll see what Bear thinks coming up. NFL, just quickly here. We talked about this Friday. Just not a great day going in. A lot of weird matchups. The 1 o'clock games didn't have a lot of juice. The one game I picked Philly minus the points, and I thought I was going to get lucky because Philly's up 6. They score a touchdown. Hurts played terribly in the game, 77 passing yards well into the fourth quarter. But Carolina has 3rd and 11 on their own 2. And I said, man, if I get a stop, I'll run one in, you know, either kick the extra point, probably go for 2, but I have a chance to cover this. Next thing you know, Carolina moves the ball to the point where they throw the ball in the end zone. Leggett has a chance to catch it, which would have tied the game. Extra point would have given Carolina the lead. There still would have been 40-something seconds left, but Carolina was very close to stealing that game. The ball was dropped. Young is much improved, by the way. Young is a very formidable, functional NFL quarterback. I don't know that he's ever going to be a star or above average in what they drafted him for, but Young is a halfway decent player, which something we wouldn't have expected to say beginning of the season or last year. But Philly survives. Minnesota, again, quietly 11-2. Darnold's played great, and man, I don't know what you do if you're Minnesota. It sounds like they're not going to re-sign him, and it's just a tricky spot because they drafted McCarthy 10th overall. McCarthy's young. He's cheap. He's on a rookie contract, so I guess you let Darnold go, and with the rest of the team you have, you figure anyone, not anyone, but as long as you're halfway decent, you can have an effective quarterback. But the way Darnold has played, I don't feel great if I'm Minnesota about letting him walk out the door. It's just, man, do you really want to match what he's going to get on the open market with the kind of season he's had? And if you're one of these other teams, you figure, all right, he's doing this with Jefferson and with Addison, and that is a tremendous duo. Is he really going to do that if we bring him to, you know, not that the Jets would bring him back, or, you know, you get the idea of the Giants, some of these other teams, the Raiders, if we bring him in, is he going to do this, or is it the fact that he's in the perfect environment, good coach, good offense? But that's a conversation for the offseason. But Minnesota continues to just quietly go about their business and win ball games here. And they are 11-2, but they might be in a situation where they're like a 14-3 number 5 seed, because Detroit never loses and Philly never loses. And, you know, they do play Detroit the final week in Detroit. Detroit has some tougher games against Buffalo, against San Francisco, who played better on Sunday, at Chicago. Chicago gives them fits. So maybe you can steal a division. Maybe you just keep winning and hope that you win out and steal a division. But it looks like Minnesota being like a 3-loss, a 14-3, 5 seed is a cruel break, but it seems like it's very possible. Bills Rams was a lot of fun. Bills claw back. Terrible job by the refs. False start on the Rams. They didn't call ticky tack pass interference on the Bills. That's called, that would have ended another drive. And then the Rams commit pass interference and they pick it up after they throw the flag. Allen was tremendous in the game. You cannot, though, if you're the Bills and you're McDermott, you cannot call that timeout you have with a minute left, down 9. You need to score the touchdown and save all your timeouts. I don't care if you waste 10 or 12 seconds getting back to the line, running another play. That third timeout is what's keeping you in the game. You can't burn that timeout. But Allen, now you could look at this and say, hey, the Bills lost and they could lose next week. They play the Lions. That's 2 losses in a row. Does that bring Allen back to the pack in terms of the MVP? Probably not. He had 3 rushing touchdowns, 3 passing touchdowns in this loss. First player to ever have 3 passing, 3 rushing touchdowns in a losing effort. So I think Allen, if nothing else, probably solidified his chance to win MVP. But that's a big loss. That really hurts. And Kansas City's playing the Chargers right now, but that hurts Buffalo's chance to get the one, because now they're at 3 losses. We'll see what happens with the Chiefs. But that was a game the Bills could have come back and won, but they got some really, really rough breaks in terms of the ref. And winning that game for the Rams, A, keeps the Rams alive, and that really hurts San Francisco's chances too, because now it's going to be really hard for San Francisco, any hope of them running the table in you know, any dream of them coming from behind to win that division probably goes out the window. And that's the other thing too, probably the biggest game of the day, Seattle, Arizona. Seattle, after falling behind 7-0, you blink and it's 7-0. That was one of those weird 4:05 Eastern where you kind of still watching the early games. You forget it starts. You look up at 7-0 Arizona. It was all Seattle after that. Arizona did have a chance to get back into it late, down 9. Their drive stalls. They look like they almost had a touchdown pass. They settle for a field goal. A makeable kick, 40 yards straight on. It hits the post. Game was over at that point. So Seattle is in good shape to win that division. Arizona now lost 3 in a row. They are in dire straits. They are not going to win the division, and they are in rough shape here to even make the playoffs. So a season that looked like it was, you know, Gannon was live for maybe coach of the year. They could win the division. All of that stuff is by the wayside. They are going to have their work cut out for them to even make the playoffs. So kind of a ho-hum day in the NFL. The Monday night game is terrible. Now, we've gotten lucky with these primetime games. You know, Packers-Lions was fun. Browns-Broncos was great on Monday night. Steelers-Browns in the snow a couple weeks ago was fun. So these primetime games have been really good. But this is not, at least on paper, Bengals laying 5.5 to the Cowboys. Man, I mean, do the Bengals have anything left? What are they playing for at this point? They know it's over. They've blown all of these games. On paper, they're much better than Dallas. I guess I would take the points, but I have no interest in betting this game. Honestly, I'm not going to be betting this game, so I'm not going to even hint at a bet that I don't like or I'm not going to make. So this is just one, you wish you could flex out, but with all the sports coming up with the college football playoff, and we have a day on December 21st. We have 3 college football games and 2 NFL games. So there's going to be plenty of games, to watch coming up here. So this is one where, this is a Monday night where you either watch college basketball or you get caught up on shows or you get caught up on sleep. This is a game where, you know, unless you do have a bet that you really like, this is one you could skip. So kind of a ho-hum day in the NFL. Bills-Rams was fun. Seattle takes control in the West. Minnesota keeps winning. Jets find another way to lose. They're done, even though Rodgers played pretty well. Not a ton of huge takeaways. Philly survives. Not a ton of things that really shake up the landscape in the NFL other than those things. So we'll see what the Bear thinks. Chris Felica, that is next. This is Should Have Been More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Been More Podcast. You can catch him on the Bear Bets Podcast, Fox, Big Noon Kickoff, here to break down the college football playoff. It is the Bear, Chris Felica. Bear, what's going on, man? The field is set. How's it going?
Yeah, the field is set, and yeah, I had some reservations in the weeks leading up to this, that this committee was not necessarily doing a great job. And I think some of those fears, at least in terms of the seeding, was realized today. So, but the bracket's set, we've got games, we're going to be betting on these games that we already have, and we're going to be watching them. So it's kind of now, I think, at the point where we're kind of segueing on from the reaction about why is Texas the 5 seed? Why does Oregon, who is the number one seed, have to potentially beat Tennessee, Ohio State, Texas, and Georgia to win the national championship, whereas Penn State, team that lost to Ohio State and lost to Oregon, they get on the easier side of the draw. And oh, by the way, Georgia, who had a brutal regular season schedule, especially in the conference, having a bunch of conference road games that were incredibly difficult to win. It's a little bit karmic, a little bit of ironic that they are on the easier side of the draw. So, yeah, it's certainly a lot to talk about and look forward to here.
Bama SMU, did you have any issue? Because I didn't. I know, look, it's tedious. People, we can go around in circles. Bama people can say, hey, you guys had an easy schedule. The SMU people can say, hey, you guys lost 3 games. You should be punished for that. Mm-hmm. Both sides have a point. Right. I guess I'll ask it this way. When you went to bed last night, now the odds certainly suggested they thought SMU was going to get in. Are you surprised? Did you have any issue with the last team?
I did not have any issue. I think the way the game ended, now you would have said it at the start of the fourth quarter and they're down 17. It was like, okay, Alabama's certainly going to be a lock at this point, but the way the game went, no, I don't have an issue with it. And I'm kind of, I don't want to say glad or happy because I don't care one way or the other, but we talked about this last week on Big Noon. We talked about this on the Bear Bets Pod. Like the fact that SMU was where they were last week, you kind of put yourselves in a corner, making it difficult to drop them if they were to lose. The fact that if they were behind Alabama, behind Ole Miss, behind Miami, at least you had an out to say if they don't win, you're not moving up and you're in. Because, look, I don't think anybody's going to argue. You make a very reasonable, fair, and probably accurate argument that Alabama and Ole Miss are better than SMU. But SMU had the – I mean, Alabama had the losses. And I think Ole Miss is the team that might have the biggest gripe here because, yeah, you did lose 3 games, but you pummeled Georgia on your home field. You pummeled South Carolina in Columbia. And in a sense, in a weird way, I'm almost happy that Alabama didn't get in over Ole Miss, because that I would have had a bigger problem with than just kind of rewarding the team that got to the, even though I think conference championship games are jokes, the fact that the committee just kind of stood by their guideline and said, okay, they made a conference championship game, they lost, we're not gonna dig them for it.
What's they hire you to be a consultant, say, hey, help us with our process. What's the quickest way to fix this? What needs fixing for this process here
I
with the
would say two things. Number one would be just seed it one through 12, give the top four seeds bye. You want to put your all those conference champions in, fine, go right ahead, but seed it one through 12 and give one through four byes into the second round. And then the other thing I would maybe suggest, and the media member in me may not like it, and the college football fan in me may not like it, but maybe we don't have rankings a week out. Maybe last Tuesday night, maybe there's no ranking. That way, you don't, there isn't a lot of overreacting, and there's a little bit of mystique and unknown, and we don't really know where a team stands, and it creates a little bit more drama, because we kind of knew going into this week it was either going to be Alabama or SMU for that final spot, and that we kind of figure that the one seed was either going to be the Oregon Penn State winner or maybe Georgia. So maybe the week before the rankings, maybe we have no ranking show to create a little bit more drama and a little bit more uncertainty with these teams and not really knowing where they stand.
I usually love this conference championship weekend, and I still enjoyed it, but I'll ask you, did it take a little of the luster away? Like, hey, SEC title game, both these teams are in. A lot, like you said, had been decided. Did you enjoy the title game, the title weekend less because how much was already
Yes,
decided?
I absolutely did it. And I have a really good buddy, a friend of mine who has gone to, I think, maybe the last 15 SEC championship games. And he said the lack of buzz, I should say, was clearly noticeable. It had nothing like the level of intensity between like the Alabama Georgias or the Georgia LSUs, the Florida Bamas, all those great games in the past, just because of the high stakes, and you knew the team, you knew it was going to be a field of four or even two back in the BCS days, and like the loser was going to be out. So the buzz was not necessarily great in the building, of course, until Georgia's backup came in and wound up leading them to victory. But yeah, even me last night, I was texting you and Sammy P and Jeff in the second half of the Big Ten championship game, which was an unbelievable watch. It's as good as Penn State's offense has looked all year. And I'm like, I could barely keep my eyes open. I'm so tired right now, but did manage to keep them awake, and I'm glad I did to catch the end of the ACC title game. But as a whole, the games Friday weren't good at all. The early
No.
games on Saturday weren't good at all. So yeah, definitely a lot of drama, a lot of buzz not there. And we know these conference title games are not going to go away. So hopefully they can figure out a way to create a little bit more drama and make them a little bit more pertinent and worthwhile if these teams got to play it. Because look, that the loser of that SEC championship game, it was going to be a brutal road for them. And now for Texas to have the lack of an off week. And yeah, you get a bit of an easier game with Clemson as a double digit favorite, but to have that, and then to have to potentially play Oregon, the number one ranked team in the country, and then potentially play either Ohio State or Tennessee or something. That's just not a road that you really want to go down after playing an entire SEC regular season.
So Notre Dame laying 7.5 to Indiana, Penn State laying 8 to SMU, Texas laying 11 to Clemson, and Ohio State laying 7.5 to Tennessee. If I told you one underdog won outright, who's live here?
SMU,
Okay.
I think would be the live team, just because they do possess pieces on the offensive side of the ball to give Penn State some problems. We saw Oregon kind of go up and down the field yesterday with a mobile type quarterback and a quick kind of passing game and some really talented wide receivers. Yeah, it could be cold up there, and yes, the Penn State defense is good. But I think of all of those teams, I would be the least surprised, I think, if FSU were to have won. I thought you were going to ask me what was the first bet that you made. The only two things I haven't played a side yet. The only two things I have played, I played under 51.5 in Indiana Notre Dame, because I just don't think Indiana is going to be able to. We saw the Indiana offense really struggle against the two best defenses they played all year, Michigan
Yes.
and Ohio State. So I don't know how they score points against a really good Notre Dame defense. And I played under 47 and a half in Tennessee, Ohio State for the same reasons, because we have seen the interior of the Ohio State offensive line struggle against some good fronts, and Tennessee's front is very good. And on the flip, Tennessee's offense has really struggled on the road all year, with the exception of the one game in Nashville against Vanderbilt. So, two unders, just worried that those numbers might come down because of maybe weather fears or whatever. So, hopefully, at the very least, I'll get a little bit of a CLV there and can look at those. But yeah, those two totals are the only things that I have played so far.
Who would you pick as a champion?
It's hard not to pick Georgia just because of the draw. And I know you've got the backup quarterback, but he was a five-star. He was a top, like, 75, I think, national recruit. It's not like he was a bum. And their offense actually looked pretty good in the second half. And I wonder if that is going to cause everybody else around him to elevate. I think the type of receivers they have with Arian Smith and Lovett, like, they're more of a quick-hitting slant underneath catch-and-go type of offense with those guys. Maybe they get Colby Young back as well. But I think Gunnar Stockton's ability to run and make the, that that makes that makes that offense a little bit different to prepare with. And I think we saw their defense really play well and shut down. Look, you potentially could play a Notre Dame team that really doesn't have much of a passing attack. You could play an Indiana team that really couldn't move the ball. Then your three seeds, Boise, and you're certainly not going to be afraid of them. And even SMU and Penn State, you're not going to really dread them. Like, it would be, in my mind, a pretty significant upset if Georgia were to not get to the national championship game. And at that point, who the hell knows what will happen? But yeah, to have three of the four best teams in the country on that top side, where you've got Oregon, Ohio State, and Texas, and then over the way, Tennessee, who I think was what, ranked sixth, I think, in the rankings. Just not a Oregon, congratulations. You're 13-0. You're the number one overall seed. You've been scoring points all year. Your reward is Tennessee and Ohio State. And then you're either going to have to beat Texas or Arizona State, most likely Texas. And then you get past that. And then you got the team that's won two of the last three national championships out there as well. So, Oregon, I just don't know how the committee looked at this bracket and didn't go back and say, maybe they'd go back and say, and maybe it was the conclusion that they came to again. I don't know how they came to this conclusion, like, oh yeah, this looks right. So who the hell knows? But I mean, I think Georgia would certainly be my pick just because of the potential path that they have. And like, Ohio State, I thought, might have been built to make a run, but to have that path where they're going to have to beat Tennessee, avenge the loss to Oregon, and then beat Texas, like, that's a brutal path for anybody on that top side. So I think, in terms of, like, the easier road, the teams on the bottom certainly have an easier path. I guess if I, it's funny, I said SMU would be the underdog I'd most likely pick to win first round game. But at the same time, if you're looking to avoid one of those top teams, like Penn State, the Penn State team we saw last night offensively was, I think, the team we kind of been waiting on all year. And if Aller can run, if they get a nice indoor warm weather type situation on offense where the quarterback can give the Georgia defense problem, that would potentially be someone outside of those top four. And I know that's really not going out on a limb, but I think in the end, Georgia will ultimately be in that title game. And if they are, I think they'll be tough to beat.
No drama, Heisman Saturday, right? It's going to be Hunter
I
clearly.
would think so. I mean, the price went down to, like, what, -1,000 plus 500 or
Oh, I
something.
didn't see that.
Yeah, I was checking it out, and boy, I mean, in Boise, just because I had the, I think I had, like, the Michigan or the New York cash on my DraftKings app, and so I saw, like, it was like -1,000 or plus 500. So I don't think there is going to be any drama. I hope there isn't. I could really use the 60-1 cash on Travis Hunter, and I don't think there really should be. And look, what I hate about this is, and Ingram and Brady and Leinart are giving me shit on the when we're hanging around watching games, and it's like, if you're supporting Travis Hunter, like, you have this perception that you're, like, you think Ashton Jeanty stinks, and that's not the case at all. Jeanty's a really good back, but I just think the week in, week out of going against a Mountain West schedule as a running back is a little bit different than what you're looking at as a guy playing two ways, and people, oh, the snap count isn't a stat. It's not a snap count. It's averaging whatever the hell, 13, 14 yards a touch, 90 something catches, and what, 15 touchdowns as a receiver, a Biletnikoff level type wide receiver, along with a Thorpe Award level defensive back who
Yeah.
graded out, I think, is like the second highest DB in the country and had some picks. Like, he's like award national player of the year level on two key positions. And it's like to have that all wrapped up into one, like the people who just, look, Colorado's a lightning rod. And I think, in a sense, a lot of people are anti Travis Hunter because they're anti Colorado and they're anti Deion. And that's unfair to the kid, just like it's kind of unfair to the people who think Travis Hunter is really good and should win. They're just kind of perceived like, oh, you just don't like him because he goes to Boise State. So you got to fight your battles here somewhere. You need to kind of delineate and make a decision based on something. And I've done it with the college football playoff too. Like, college football is the most like schedule oriented sport that there is. And I hate to say it, but that's just, it's just unfortunate. People, oh, well, he's only 100 and whatever yards shy of Barry Sanders. Yeah, Barry, A, he's already played two more games than
Right.
Barry Sanders played. And B, Barry Sanders didn't have 257 yards or whatever it was in the bowl game added to his 11-game schedule. So yards per game is certainly the better indicator. He's had a great year, but in my opinion, Travis Hunter is the winner.
I heard some Boise State people making the case, and I didn't know they were Boise State people until I saw the words. Then I click on them, and they got that big like Bronco profile comparing Travis Hunter to Chris Gamble of Ohio State, who played both ways. Where, I mean, you look at Chris Gamble's stats. Look, he was a good player, but some years were like three or four catches. Just, man, the bad faith arguments people make is
Correct.
crazy.
Hey, what Travis Hunter did on both sides of the ball dwarfs what Charles Ward Woodson did on both sides of the ball. And Joel Klatt even made a good argument as well, comparing what Melvin Gordon did in 2014 as a running back. Melvin Gordon didn't sniff the Heisman Trophy, and he had a better year than what Ashton Jeanty's having. So, like, you depending on who you want to win the award, you can kind of craft things the way that you want. But anybody trying to say that Travis Hunter was not productive and not a national player of the year or the best player in the country, it's hard for me to swallow.
Yeah, and Genty's been awesome, but I don't know that Genty's like that far ahead of than Scadabo from Arizona State,
No,
who's had an incredible
hell
year.
no. Scadabo, Dylan Sampson at
Yeah.
Tennessee, RJ Harvey at UCF. There were a lot of great
There's
backs.
gonna be it's a
Taylor
great it's a
Cale Johnson
loaded.
at Iowa. There were a lot of great backs. And I love people, you're talking about, oh, Genty's going to be a first round pick. Is he?
I'm not sure about that.
Is
There's a
he?
lot of good running
Is
backs. North
he?
Carolina running back is good. I don't know if
Yeah,
Notre Dame running
Hampton.
back is good.
Yeah, Jordan. Yeah, the love is fantastic, Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Keep saying Jeremiah Love.
Well, any NFL takeaways from today?
I think Josh Allen salted away the MVP award. He,
Even in a loss.
even I mean, he was unbelievable. And the way that game ended sucked. Because I mean, I don't know how the officials missed that. And I'm not one of these guys who's sitting there yelling illegal procedure, false start on every snap, but that was about an obvious of a false start as you had. Fourth and 11 would have been a lot different than fourth and five. I mean, that non-call potentially could decide the number one overall seed in the
Yes.
AFC and probably and may have just eliminated the 49ers if they didn't or it weren't already eliminated them from the division, and it kept the Rams in despite Seattle's win today. So that was the big takeaway for me there. And just the Steelers, like we just keep expecting this thing to end, but now that you're two games up in that division, you're probably gonna win it.
It's
It's
tough. Philly, the
pretty
Chiefs,
remarkable.
it gets tough at the Ravens. It does get tough, but hey, we've been saying it's tough all year and they just keep dancing through the raindrops. And
And
yeah, Buffalo got some tough calls too, where they it looked like the Rams were gonna have to kick a field goal. They called kind of a ticky-tacky pass interference. Then they picked one up against the Rams. So yeah, I mean, you can always nitpick these refs, but that was not a friendly whistle for Buffalo. And you can't use your last time out if you're Buffalo. You got to just run to the line when they were down 10. Even if it costs you an extra 12 seconds, 10 seconds, get in the end zone, keep the timeout. The timeouts, you have all three, it keeps the game alive.
Exactly. And then your division there with the Vikings, they just can continue to find ways to win. And we talked about it on Thursday on the Bear Bets Pod in the NFL. Like was it time for the Falcons to go to Michael Penix? And you have to wonder what we were mentioning about, like, kind of a soft spot on the schedule here. Raiders, Giants, Commanders, Panthers, like the last four games that you may have, you have the tiebreak with Tampa, but you may need Michael Penix to come in. Now, you drafted him for a reason. You said he was your quarterback of the future and a great insurance policy to have for Cousins. Cousins is done. I think to give him a start on Monday night against a bad Raiders team might be the way to go for Atlanta.
Do you like anything in this Monday night game? It's an awful game. Bengals, Cowboys, anything interest you?
I did not play anything. What's a team total on the Bengals? That would be probably the only thing that I would look probably 30 and a half or something like that, maybe. And I don't even have it in front of me. But that, I mean, the Cowboys defense isn't very good, and neither is the Bengals defense with all those injuries that they have. So I would look at a I can open up the one of those friendly apps right now and.
27 and a half is not bad. 26 and a half, you have to lay 135. 27 and a half, you get 102. So over.
I'd go over 27 and a half.
It's
Yeah,
not bad.
absolutely. They're
Just
not going
wonder
to.
at some point, is Cincy's, you know what? We lost all these close games. We had high hopes.
Yep.
Do they kind of, they mail in a little bit? Wait, San Francisco didn't today, but you wonder if they're shot a little bit. Now, people, by the time they listen, Soto might have signed already. So we can both
Oh,
get our
really?
I mean, it's possible by the time people listen to this, I guess he's nearing a decision. What team will he be playing for? When he does make a decision.
I've thought all along it's going to be the Mets. That was my guess, and then if there was there were kind of some steam out there and reports that it was going to be the Red Sox. I'm still going to stick with the Mets. I'm going to say that Steve Cohen and the Mets to land the big splash to put him in that lineup with Lindor and Alvarez and whoever else they've got in there and kind of steal him away from the Yankees, which would do a double take of absolutely gutting Yankees fans and really bolstering the Mets to kind of continue the momentum of the offseason that they had last year. So I'm going to say Mets.
I have not been confident he's coming back to the Yankees. This is the
I
most
wasn't either.
confident I've been. This is the most confident I've been, though. That you see some of the
Okay.
reports today. Heyman said that the Yankees have gotten in the 730 to 750 million range, and they're both
Good.
around the same. And that Soto loves Judge, and he's comfortable there. So
Good.
who knows? I don't know if he's setting you up for a soft, landing. If you're a Yankee fan,
Boom.
just
Exactly.
setting you up where, hey, if he signs with the Mets, hey, the Yankees really tried. Hal made a respectable offer. Which, look, if you're offering $730 million, it's not like
That's
it's
all.
not a respectable offer. But
Exactly.
I think as long as the Yankees get within $20 million, man, he does have Judge behind him. The marketing of the Yankees, it sounds like it's possible. Now, who knows? Who knows what to believe here? But this is the most confident I've been that he's going to re-sign with the Yankees.
But I just hope it's not one of those, and we joke about it. That they were in on, yeah.
Yeah.
They were in on them, yeah. And then winds up bolting, yeah. The Orioles were in on, yeah. Oh, by the way, yeah. I'm sorry, just got hedge fund money or whatever the capital finance or whatever else in there, and all those prospects. Yeah, we were in on, but we're not going to improve our team.
Because if you don't bring Soto back, I mean, Judge is at the age where I don't know how you make the team good enough to win a World Series while
Oh.
he's still in his prime. Cole's older. Like, you bring Soto back, you can repair the bullpen. You might be a pitcher short, but hey, you're in the conversation. Without Soto, I don't care who you get. You can talk about
Anthony
any of these other.
Santander.
Yeah, exactly. Adamas is off the board. There is no plan B. So I feel like the Yankees are more desperate.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And especially after getting to the World Series and losing the way they did,
Oh.
you would think that you the old man would have never the old man would have had this done by now.
Yes.
Like you know the old man would be dying that he lost to the Dodgers the way they did, and he would be doing everything to spend whatever the hell he could to get back there and give that team a chance to win.
And the old man would have a di very different looking team with the Harpers and the Seegers of the world. I mean, these prospects, the Anthony
Exactly.
Volpes of the world would have been traded so fast, your head would spin. Not even an issue. All right, Bear. Appreciate it, man. Let everyone know where they can
Course.
find you.
If you can find me where we find you, Bear Bet's a little different schedule coming up. We got to figure out the schedule with the postseason, but we will have some stuff coming up on Thursday, certainly for the NFL. We're on FS1 now with these pods, which is great. Columns coming out, but yeah, check out the feed. We'll let you know what the podcast schedule is coming up in the picks column as well. I'm very, very happy, by the way, with the picks column this year. I ended up 50, 35, and 2. So after having a kind of a shitty year last year, my first year at the new place, had a really good year this year. And right now I'm looking, I think I'm second place with the Chiefs outstanding in the Circa Friday Football Invitational. So hopefully I can continue to close up some ground.
Oh, I didn't know you're in second place in the VEASAN contest.
Yeah.
Who's in
Yeah,
first?
Chuck Edel. Edel's been going crazy. I think he's been just crushing every total out there. And at last check, he was up, I think, five on me coming into the week. So I got to go back and look. I picked up a picked up the Niners, which was a win, and then I got a my best bet was the Chiefs. So hopefully, when I get done here with you, I can go down there and watch the Chiefs finally play a complete, solid, emphatic football game for the first time since the Eagles game, maybe, right? The
Yeah,
Niners, Niners.
well, Melissa Stark is interviewing Patrick Mahomes. That means the game is about to start. So I'll let you go
It
enjoy it, man.
certainly is.
Appreciate the
M
time.
M Melissa Stark getting deep there with Patrick Mahomes at the start. I don't have it. I don't have the volume up, but I can only imagine where they're going.
Appreciate the time, man. Thanks.
Absolutely, bud.
All right, that'll do it. Thanks to the Bear, Chris Felica. We will be back Wednesday. Plenty to talk about. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Wednesday.